When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even more political. Hello, my friends. It's me, Louise McSharry, back with another episode of Catch Up with Louise McSharry. But then you know that because you've put this on by choice. Anyway, this is the podcast where I try and catch you up in the week. If you haven't been paying attention, don't worry about it. Absolutely no judgment around here ever about anything, unless you have like some kind of racist or homophobic opinion. But no, certainly no judgment in terms of people not paying attention to the news or what's going on in the world around them. We all have busy lives, my friends. I've had pretty quiet week, I think, since we last spoke. I haven't really been doing a whole lot. I have been enjoying the weather despite the overarching sense of impending doom regarding the climate. If you can just get past that, it is quite nice at the moment to see the sunshine every day. I have a few bits of things that I've been meaning to tell you for the last couple of weeks, and I kept forgetting when I was recording these bits for the podcast. And the first is in response to the wonderful Pamela Uba, who I had on a couple of weeks ago. Several of you got in touch with me, including one of my very good friends, Justine, to tell me about a program called Let's Match Mums. Basically, the premise is they will match people with mothers who are living in direct provision. The idea is that mothers are matched based on kind of the age of their children. And it means that you can share stuff, pass along things from your baby that you're not using anymore or your kids that you're not using anymore to someone in direct provision who may need them. You can also just generally support them and help them out. And aside from the fact that, you know, they match people, they also fundraise generally in order to keep things going, basically. So they have a Patreon. So if that sounds like a program that you'd like to support, maybe you don't have a baby, maybe your kids are too old, maybe you're never planning on having a baby, that's absolutely fine. But you'd still quite like to support women in direct provision and people in direct provision, then this might be a good cause to make a donation to. You can support them on Patreon. You can also check out all the information on letsmatchmums.com. It sounds like an absolutely brilliant program, and my friend, as I said, Justine is in it herself at the moment. She is matched with a mother and she is absolutely loving it. So there you go, that's a good tangible way that you can support people in direct provision if that's something that you'd like to do. And then the other thing that I keep forgetting to tell you is that I'm going to be doing a live podcast show. Live shows are something that I've always wanted to do, and it's one of the things that always appealed to me about doing a podcast was that it was something that you could do live and kind of make a show out of and take on the road even potentially. And I'm going to be dipping my toe tentatively into that scene as part of Dublin Fringe Festival. Absolutely honored to have been asked to be part of it. It's going to be fun, I think. I'm going to have music from Circa Richardson, which I'm absolutely delighted about. I'm such a huge fan of Circa's. She's got a new album coming out in September, and I've heard it. It is fantastic. So I'm really delighted that she's agreed to be a part of this. I'm also going to be joined by some familiar voices from the podcast. And we're just going to generally have a bit of crack. Hopefully we'll provoke some thoughts. I feel like it's on a Sunday night. It's on September 18th. It's on at 8:30. I feel like it'd be a really nice way to close out your weekend. You know how sometimes it's nice to have something to look forward to on a Sunday evening. And because it's at 8:30, you might even be able to sneak out after your kids' bedtime, if that's a factor in your life. Or go out for dinner with your pals beforehand if your children are not part of your rotation and schedule and life, and if you actually get to make decisions for yourself without considering other people. If you want to get tickets, tickets are via fringefest.com. I'll stick a link in the show notes, but I would love to see you there. I'm excited about doing it. I'm excited about the vibe generally, but I'm also so excited about having a room full of people. Like, this will be my first time seeing you guys and meeting you guys. And I feel like I might be emotional. I don't know. So come see me be a total mess, potentially. Who knows how it's going to go? No, I think it's going to be good fun. So as I said, tickets are available now. It's 8:30 on September 18th, and you can get them at fringefest.com. Now, though, let's get on with the show. It's time to catch up on the week's news. Aoife Moore, political correspondent with the Sunday Times Ireland. Hello and
good
welcome back
morning.
To the podcast.
Speaking from Louise McSharry's humble abode.
Yeah, what a delight. Mm-hmm. Everybody came to me today. I'm so lucky. So we've got loads to get through, Aoife. As always, there's loads of news in about the place. And actually, we've got a couple of good stories here, which is good. But we'll start with, well, I suppose this is a good news story. There's lots of chat starting about the budget and what's going to happen in the budget. And Leo Varadkar has said that there are going to be substantial income tax reductions.
This is what we call in journalism kite flying. So the budget is not till October, but they start kite flying quicker and quicker. Now it seems like budget talk starts in like July. So we're going to see a lot of this in the next couple of weeks. So gird your loins, people. Mm-hmm. But Leo Varadkar, the leader of Fine Gael and the Taoiseach, was out yesterday and said that there is an option for a new 30% income tax band that the government might bring in. There was a number of tax strategy group papers that were given to government and published, but no decision has been made. They're basically options for what the government can do, because as we know, we're in a cost of living crisis and something has to give. So this third income tax could see up to 1 million taxpayers take home an extra €500 or €1,000 per year. So a middle income tax would be people, now there are two options, they could do it for people earning between €36,800 and €41,800, which would cost the government around €525 million a year, or they could do it between €36,800 and €46,800, which would cost the government nearly €1 billion. I would point out that this is very much a Fine Gael friendly policy. Fine Gael have hitched their wagon to being the party of the squeezed middle. So they're saying people who make around 36,000, that would be the squeezed middle, up to 46,000. I think Fine Gael personally will push for the 46. You know, a higher income bracket, very more attractive to Fine Gael voters, traditionally anyway. And, you know, the opposition have been out already and saying this is just for the middle. You know, that people are making less than €36,000 a year. There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
And it does nothing for them.
Yeah.
But because of inflation, I think it's likely that this is going to happen, because remember, the Minister for Finance is a Fine Gael minister, Pascal Donoghue, and is now examining whether it could be introduced. So there is a lot of plans. There's a lot of kite flying. We know we'll see stuff in childcare. Subsidies are going to be increased. We've talked about that before.
Woo-hoo.
But this is good news if you make over 36,000 your year. And it will not be just one thing. You know, the budget will have to give a lot more. And they were talking about yesterday, they said, you know, we'll see tax breaks. There'll be breaks for renters, breaks for landlords, childcare. I think this is one budget where usually the giveaway budget is the year before an election, but I think this might be a bit of a giveaway budget, only because we're in a cost of living crisis and the government is quite unpopular,
well,
and the government parties are
something.
Quite unpopular.
Yeah, I mean, they have to. Okay, well, I'm sure we're going to talk about this stuff again loads and loads. I also to acknowledge the fact that there was a Daft report out this week, just in the context of the cost of living, that rent increases have hit a new high. And like every time they say this, I'm like, yeah, but every month it's
a
new high.
Can it go any higher?
But this is really like Dublin rent year on year, the average rent is up 12.7%.
Yeah, nowhere has gone untouched. You know, Limerick, Waterford, Galway recorded a
around
record
17%.
High jump. Yeah, like
it's huge.
So the average market rent across Ireland between April and June is €1,600, a 3.3% increase, and more than double the low of $765 per month in 2011. I can't even imagine someone paying $765 for their rent.
My husband and I rented an apartment on Capel Street, a beautiful one-bedroom apartment. It would have been about 8 or 9 years ago. So yeah, let's say 10 years ago in 2012. Mm-hmm. And we paid €950 a month for that apartment. There's just no way now. It's crazy.
Louise, guess how many homes are already available to rent in the entire country?
Oh my God, I mean, I have no idea. It's going to be bad though.
Well, let's say there's like 5 million people in the country. How many houses do you think they already rent?
Oh, I'm really bad at these questions. I'm bad at numbers. I don't know, 1,000?
716.
Oh God.
So just for, in layman's terms, it's the lack of rental accommodation that is pushing the prices up, because when you're a landlord or a big investor or whoever mm-hmm. owns these apartments and houses, you can charge way more money because, you know,
people
are desperate. Just anecdotally, I was talking to a friend last week who's moving out of a one bedroom flat on the North Circular Road, and 1,000 people contacted his landlord just to see this flat when he was leaving. One bedroom flat on the North Circular Road in Dublin.
Oh my God. Okay, let's move on. We haven't talked about COVID in a while, but there we're back. And second boosters are going to be available, are available now to pregnant people and people over 60.
Yeah, people age 60 and over will be invited to come forward for their next COVID booster vaccine. It feels like so long ago since we had vaccines, but yeah. So from yesterday, people over 60 and pregnant people can make an appointment through the HSE, and they'll begin next Monday. Dr. Colm Henry, again, a name we have not heard in a long time, said it was just ongoing protection from serious illness, increase your immunity against infection from COVID-19, which we know tends to reduce after a period of months following your last vaccine. You know, we had a scare a couple of, like last month, the month before, it seemed everyone had COVID again. And I think, you know, we are heading into winter now. We know the climate emergency, it's probably going to be a colder winter. And that, along with the flu, we're expecting, because we're all vaccinated and we were all in lockdown for so long, our immunity, even to the flu, is waning. So I think it's more offense than defense at this stage. They're trying to ensure that we don't have as a bad winter. And I think especially people, you know, over 60, it is worthwhile. We know after 6 months, your immunity wanes. So he said as well that as fear passes and people sense the pandemic is no longer a threat, he's urging people to get boosted ahead of winter.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like that's just going to be our lives for a while anyway.
Yeah. Like, we kind of always knew after the first year that this would become something like a flu jab. Especially for older people and pregnant people.
Yeah. Okay. Now, this is for me the best news of the week, because apparently we're going to be able to leave WhatsApp groups without it sending everyone else in the group a notification.
Sometimes I enjoy the drama, I'm not going to lie, when someone very dramatically, I'm in a lot of, you know, WhatsApp groups full of women and bitchy men, so someone dramatically leaving is great. But WhatsApp are bringing in a suite of new measures that a lot of them are great. So we can really send, you know, like view once messages, but now WhatsApp will borrow this feature from Snapchat, and it can block screenshots. Oh my God, don't like this, the amount of drama that's
I know.
And yeah, block screenshots, and they'll also be able, as we talked about, you'll be able to leave. So you know the way now it says Louise McSharry has left, you can just silently leave. And this is my favorite one, because this is my personal bugbear with WhatsApp, is that the third update will let users limit who can see when they're online, letting them expose that sensitive information to friends and family without needing to inform the world when they're checking their phones. Because I took the last scene off, but then was really annoyed when I found out people could still see I was online. Because the whole point of taking the last scene off is that I don't want people to know I was ignoring them. So this is a good thing. Mark Zuckerberg, Mans is everywhere, the CEO of WhatsApp, parent company Meta, said that we'll keep building new ways to protect your messages and keep them as private and secure as face-to-face conversations. I think we'll see a lot of this with apps, you know, like what, like Instagram were accused of trying to be TikTok, and now WhatsApp are taking lead from Snapchat, because we know especially like the kids use Snapchat to talk to one another because the features are better there, a lot more privacy, that sort of stuff. But like, yeah, I think this is a good thing.
Oh, it's a great thing. I saw lots of parents celebrating.
Oh, really?
this week. Now, I personally have no issue with the school WhatsApp groups that I'm in, but
yeah, sure, okay.
No, they're actually pretty good, but I've heard horror stories about other ones that like are nonstop memes and nonstop, you know, whatever chats, buy and sell groups they become and things like that. And you can't be, you know, so-and-so's mom who doesn't want to talk to the other parents.
This is really not a circle I run on, so I'm learning a lot.
It's all ahead of you potentially if you choose to make that decision. Okay, this was an interesting one. I thought Mobi, who are a bike sharing app, this week had to change their naming strategy for bikes after a kind of linguistic snafu.
So originally I felt a bit sorry for this company because I was like, oh, maybe they're a foreign company and they don't understand.
Yeah.
But they're not. They're Irish. So Mobi Bikes is an Irish company and they are providing push bikes and delivery bikes across UK, Ireland and America.
If you're in Dublin, you've probably seen them. They're the neon yellow ones.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they use human or names to organise their flights. So Maeve, Bridget, Liam. But they also used to use planet and country names and Earth and whatever else. But when you have it on the app, so obviously to unlock the bike, you need to use the app and they're notified of the name of the bike and, you know, the duration of their travel. If you've ever used one of those electric scooters when you're away on holidays, it's the same sort of thing. However, the use of the verb to ride in an Irish context followed by a female name spark complaints among users because the bike was then saying, you know, you are now riding Maeve, you are now riding Louise, you're now riding Aoife, lucky guys. And there was a number of complaints. The spokesman said, you know, it's been adopted by bike sharing companies across Europe and it's to facilitate the user experience. And he compared it to the Irish Navy has vessels named Kira, Roisin and Niamh. And Aer Lingus names their planes after women. Can we just stop naming inanimate objects after women? It's like when people call a boat or a car she. I'm like, can you not?
Well, anyway. What boats, like it's like a cultural thing, I think. Like it's always been that boats are women. Maybe that needs to be examined. But like say, with like, cars.
You could argue anything as a cultural thing. But yeah, so because riding is definitely, you know, an Irish colloquialism, they have decided that they're going to have to change them. So they said, in light of the controversy, we decided that the 350 new pedal bikes in Dublin City are better off being labelled as inanimate objects and the names were reverted to numbers.
Mm. I thought this part of his statement was interesting. Unfortunately, a sexualized or slang interpretation of to ride was immediately seized upon and caused outrage on Twitter. There's a kind of tone there isn't there? Yeah.
Like it's a manufactured annoyance.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you feel that way, vibes.
Like, I have to say, I saw, I think, the tweet that kicked this off.
See, I didn't.
Yeah. And when the person basically was saying, oh, for God's sake, like it's so hard to get a license to kind of do bike sharing in Dublin and these cowboys got it and this is what they're doing. And like the person was really annoyed and like, oh, they think they're really funny, blah, blah, blah. And I was kind of like, no, I don't know if I can bring myself to get annoyed about this, to be honest. But, you know, I suppose as part of a larger culture that maybe is not so respectful to women, I can see why people might take issue with it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they did the right thing. They changed it. Mm. It's just better off to have a quiet life, isn't
it? This is it, yeah. Mm. And then before I let you go.
No, this is sad.
We're going to talk about sport again.
Honestly, this is the worst news all week.
Serena, it actually is really
Serena
bad.
Williams, the greatest of all time, who, you know, shot to fame as a 17-year-old from Compton. She holds the Open era record of 23 Grand Slam titles. She's got 4 Olympic medals. They have made a film about her life. She has announced that she is leaving tennis. She said that it makes her incredibly sad. If anyone's read it, it's a personal essay in Vogue magazine where she talks about she's in the car with her young daughter, Olympia, and as if she would call her child Olympia. And they asked her, what do you want to be when you grow up? She was playing a wee game with an app and she said, I want to be a big sister. And she says that the kid says this all the time, that she wants to be a big sister. And she said, you know, if that is the case, She's 41 and she's now going to have to leave tennis. She very famously played the Australian Open in 2017 when she was 2 months pregnant with Olympia, proving I believe that women can do anything. She said she doesn't like the word retirement. She doesn't feel like it's a modern word. She said that, you know, this is more of an evolution. She's evolving away from tennis towards things that are more important to me. I actually laughed out loud at this next bit where she said, I quietly started at Serena Ventures, a venture capital firm, because that's what most of us do.
Just quietly.
Quietly
start Only venture quietly capital. Start a venture capital firm.
Her tech bro, very wealthy husband, Alexis, she said that he has never broached it. You know, it's like a taboo subject in their house about retirement. She said she spoke a lot about it with her therapist. And she said that she's spoken to other female tennis players that who retired and have spoken of their happiness, you know, because it's a grueling lifestyle. You know, she's constantly watching what she eats and exercises. But this is it. She said that her entire life, there's a picture of her pushing Venus pushing me on a stroller on a tennis court, and I couldn't have been more than 18 months. So this is her entire life, and now she is leaving tennis for good. And she said, I should have had 30 plus grand slams. I think it's a very woman thing. Like 23 grand slams isn't enough. I should have had 30 grand slams. She had a very traumatic birth with her first daughter. Yeah. She's talked about that before. And she said, you know, I've had an extraordinary life. I'm an incredibly hands-on mother. In 5 years, she's only spent one 24-hour period away from her daughter. And now this is it. She's hanging up her racket.
It is just the frustration of, you know, the biological realities of being, you know, a woman or, you know, in most cases, it's women who are challenged by these things. And, you know, you really feel for her, really, really feel for her. But she has been incredible.
She's a trailblazer. And even how she dealt with the media. And, you know, it's very clear if you watch that documentary about Serena, the racism that they suffered as two black teenagers from Compton when they were starting out in tennis. And even the racism that she's had about her body type, you know, most tennis players that we are used to are these very petite, thin, very blonde, very tall women. You know, Serena's built and like she always puts that down to that's how why she's so good at tennis.
Yeah, exactly.
Because she's so powerful. So I'm really, really sad, but she is the greatest of all time. And I think even in the aftermath of her publishing this, we've seen from everyone, from tennis players to Tiger Woods, to everyone coming out and saying there is no one like her. There'll never be anyone like her. She's unbelievable.
Fair play, Serena. Okay, Aoife Moore, political correspondent at the Sunday Times Ireland. Thank you so much. Erica Cody is a singer, a songwriter, a producer, a TV presenter, a dancer now. She's models. There's very little that Erica Cody can't do. And a couple of years ago, she became one of the leading voices in the Black Lives Matter movement in Ireland. She is a total gem, and I was delighted to have the chance to catch up with her, hear about her new single, and just find out what the last couple of years have been like, because they've been pretty insane. Enjoy. Erica Cody.
Louise McSherry.
Thank you so much for coming on and chatting to me this week. I suppose there might be, now they're few and far between at this stage, I'd say, but there might be some people who aren't familiar with you and 100%. What you do. So would you maybe introduce yourself for those people?
Of course. So I'm Erica Cody. I'm a singer, songwriter, sometimes producer. And now it's kind of notched my belt as I've been dabbling in TV presenting as well. So it's been a busy year.
I mean, it's been a wild couple of years for you. Because, I mean, we'll go back to a couple of years ago, but like, let's start with the recent brilliant stuff that's been going on in your life. So first of all, you did Dancing with the Stars.
I did.
How was that?
Insane. The best experience of my life. Like, I want to do it all again.
And what about it? Like, was it being part of a production like that, or was it doing the actual dancing, or?
It was pretty much all of it. Like, I'm just that kind of gal that whatever I'm doing, I love to give it 110%. And for me, this was an opportunity for me to do something that I really love, which is dance. And I always wanted to, like, try and get good at dancing, because it's very different from dancing in a nightclub and on tables to then dancing on a ballroom floor and having that kind of it's really strict, you know. Yeah. So for me, I always love a regime. I love to have a schedule of right. what I'm doing, because, you know, being freelance and like being a singer and working on your own time,
yeah,
you can kind of put things off a little bit. So to have something like that where I know that I'm going to get something out of it in the end, which is growth, and I'll come out, you know, with a new skill, for me that was the main thing. And I just kind of took it week by week, if I'm being totally honest. It wasn't one of those things that I did where I was like, I went in all guns blazing. I was like, I'm in it to win it. It was more so like, oh, I'm in it because I'm getting this amazing experience. And I know people say that all the time. They're like, oh, that's so cliche. But no, I genuinely was. I really wanted to learn how to dance, and I made amazing friends along the way. And I've memories to like last me a lifetime. You know, I watch the videos back and I'm like, how did I do that for 18 weeks? It's bizarre.
Yeah. And so like, is it, what's it like? I always wonder, what's it like after you do something like that when it's over? Because like, you made it to the final, so you did the full run of it. So how long is that? Like, I mean, when you're including prep time,
yeah.
What is that, like 12 weeks or something?
Well, it was 18 weeks in total, because right. we did a couple of weeks beforehand before we actually
started
the production. So it was a lot.
That's
of 12
a long time.
It's a long time.
It's 4 months
to,
of your life.
I have to put everything on hold. I had to put like basically my career on hold for like 4 or 5 months. I didn't have time to really write or anything like that. I'd come home and I'd be completely exhausted. I'd like be in a bath of Epsom salts before I know I'm back in the car and like heading to the studio. It took up a lot of time, but I was just like, do you know what, I have to just give up my all, because it's one of those experiences that can be over in a split second. You know, so I was like, to make it to the end for me anyway was, that was better than a trophy, because I got to do all the dances that I wanted to
but
do.
But then how do you go back to normal life? Like, I feel like that's like you're on a kind of a pretty hectic treadmill there, and then you quite abruptly get off it.
And then it just stops. It was very weird. I remember I woke up, so we obviously had the wrap party on the Sunday, and then I woke up on the Monday. Obviously I was a little bit fragile that day, so I kind of there wasn't, you know, any partying had. It was terrible crack. Just joking. But I remember waking up on the Tuesday then, and I was like, oh no, it's 11:45. I meant to be in the studio. And then I was like, oh, I'm not supposed to be in the studio because it's over.
Yeah.
And it's just like that. Your life just, I don't know, you just go from 100 to zero.
Yeah.
So for me, it was just kind of getting, I love being busy. Mm-hmm. So I just had to kind of get in the mindset of, okay, I need to start reaching out to my producers again. I need to start doing things again and writing and doing all that kind of stuff. And slowly but surely we got there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think I kind of got to wean myself off the experience, because obviously, unfortunately for Dennis, the situation in Ukraine was pretty bad.
That was wild.
He couldn't go home.
So your partner is from Ukraine.
Yes.
And everything was kicking off there. I mean, that sounds like a flippant expression to use, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Things had really gotten bad there.
Really bad.
And he was here.
Yeah.
And his family was there.
Yeah.
How was that? I mean, you obviously were right there beside him through it.
This is the thing. Like, never mind being on a show where you're literally spending all of this time with this brand new person that you literally just have to get to know so quickly. And you grow so close, you really do. Like, honestly, Dennis is one of like my really good friends. Like, we always keep in touch. I love to, you know that he's okay. So to kind of add that into the mix as well, I couldn't really wrap my head around how it must have been for him, because like, even on me, I was like, oh my god, I just want him to be okay. So to know he couldn't go back home, you know, his mom and his auntie were still over there. It was tumultuous for him. You know, we really went on a roller coaster of emotions. He definitely did, and then we did together, because I just kind of wanted to keep his spirits high, because at least I knew that he could come to the studio and have a couple of hours or whatever where he could have a little bit of peace, I suppose, because we had a job to do. But I said to him, I said, look, if you have to go home or anything like that, like, I'll fully support you. Like, it's you, like, I don't want to hold you back from, you know, life. So that was a big challenge. But, you know, he was like, look, you haven't given up on me. I won't be giving up on you. And he said, well, look, I can't go home. My mom doesn't want me to come home, because the minute I'm off the plane, I'm straight into the army. And, you know, I've just spent my whole life being a dancer. Like, I don't know.
That would have been a rough transition.
It's really mad to kind of wrap your head around that's even happening in this day and age. So,
and how is he now? Are his family still there?
They're still there. They're safe, thank God. They're in like the countryside in Odessa. So I check in with him, you know, every so often. Well, most days, to be honest. You know, it's just such a shared experience. And I think because of the situation in Ukraine, he couldn't go home for a while. So when it came to actually going back to normal life, I was pretty much kind of all he had here. And we were the best of friends. And, you know, we'd meet up, we'd go for lunch. He was here for a couple of extra weeks. So it's like I was nearly able to wean myself off the experience. But it was also, it was really bittersweet because I was like, he can't go home. So you just, I wanted to just kind of just be that support him, person for him and support him in any way that I could. And, you know, I think anybody who watched the show would be able to tell that we had a genuine, really strong friendship. And
I feel really like it would be really hard. It would be really hard if you didn't like the person. Was there anyone, I don't want names, but was there anyone who really didn't like their partner?
Do you know what? It wasn't that anyone didn't like their partner. It's just you're thrown into this really intense situation really quickly. So you have your moments. Like, we had our moments as well. Don't get me wrong. Like, it wasn't all sunshine, you know, and lollipops, sunshine and flowers. You know, we did have our weeks where, because I'm very, I want to run before I can walk. So for me, patience was a huge thing, and patience for him is a huge thing. You know, we're both Leos. We're two very strong personalities. But we found our feet, you know. It took a while, but we found our feet, absolutely. And like, I wouldn't change anything about it, to be honest, for the world. It's
good
memories for a lifetime.
Well, I mean, I can only assume that that experience kind of led into your most recent TV experience, which was The Main Stage, where you were presenting a music show with Danny O'Reilly from the Coronas.
I know.
I remember when you told me, like, you were so excited, and I was so excited for you. But like, that's real, like throwing in at the deep end.
Big time. And I remember getting the call at the time, and I was, why would they want to give me a show? Like, I'm not a presenter. I don't know. It's not my world. Like, I'm just used to making music and being accessible that way, I suppose. And then I think after doing Dancing with the Stars and, you know, being okay with other people's opinions.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of work on myself over the last, like, 2 years, to the point I feel like I've built a really thick spine.
Yeah.
So coming off the back of that and then going into The Main Stage, I was like, I'd be a fool not to take this. And I built this whole show around, you know, the two of us. So it was like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Well, I have this rule that, like, I don't allow myself to say no to opportunities if the reason is fear.
So, there you go, exactly.
I'm like, you can say no if you don't want to do something, or if you have a gut feeling that's like, no, this isn't for you or whatever. Those are all valid reasons. But if it's just that you're scared, that's not a good enough reason.
Exactly. And I had that feeling. That's so funny you said that, because I had that feeling when it came to getting approached to do Dancing with the Stars. And my agent was like, oh, she was like, I think this would be amazing for you. You know, it's just going to add to your own career.
Yeah.
You can incorporate that into your music and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, but I'm just really afraid of what people will think of me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I think especially when you're an empathetic person, you just want to always do the right thing. And that can kind of add some sort of, like, some silly amount of pressure that's, like, unwarranted. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So when I really thought about it, I was like, why would I ever... I let people's opinions dictate my happiness for so long, for, like, the guts of over a year, to the point that I was like... When this came around, I was like, why would I ever let somebody else dictate my happiness? Like, these opportunities are coming my way for a reason.
Yeah.
And I know I'll look back in like 10 years time and I'll be like, why did I ever, you know, get to that place? So when it came to The Main Stage and stuff as well, I was like, it's a no-brainer. It's not every day, you know, RTÉ comes knocking on the door and they're like, oh, we have a TV show for you and Danny O'Reilly and we'd love you to do it, you know.
And a TV show that was music about, and you got music to perform on it. Exactly. And, you know, it seemed like a dream.
Exactly, because I think, you know, being an independent musician especially, I feel like you have to work twice as hard to get your name out there, first of all, but to also build your brand and, like, who you are, to sell yourself and your music. So you're kind of, you're limited in how you make yourself accessible. So that was my only concern when I went into TV. I was like, oh my God, like, so many people are going to want to know probably so much more about me now. It's not just going to be about my music. But then when I really thought about it, I was like, but I still control my own narrative and my story. So when The Main Stage came around, it wasn't about me and Danny. It was about us putting amazing Irish music, new upcoming Irish acts and old established acts as well. So it was more of a full circle moment, because I was like, I've been there. I know what it's like to want to, you know, be on TV and have your music heard. And so to be able to be in a position where I'm part of that process and giving it that platform is a huge honor. And I couldn't, I people are like, oh, were you thrown in the deep end? And I was like, not really, no, because it was in my world. It's what I know. Exactly. So we were able to, we bounced off each other, thank God. We're like the best of friends now, me and Danny. So it all just clicked. It really just worked. And it's kind of, it's lit a new fire under my belly, you know.
It's been really cool to see you have these successes because, as you said, like, you know, the last couple of years have been pretty tumultuous. Yeah. And you were, I think, one of the leading voices in Ireland around the Black Lives Matter movement.
Yeah.
And you really, I think you were really courageous in the way that you spoke out.
Well, thank you.
Because at the time you were at the receiving end of, you know, a lot of abuse.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, racist abuse and misogynistic abuse and all kinds of abuse. Did you ever want to stop talking?
No.
Really?
No. And like, yes and no, I suppose, because by nature I'm a talker.
Yeah.
You know, I think I do have a little bit of the gift of the gab.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I just always grew up in a house where I grew up around really strong women. You know, everyone in my family is pretty much self-employed. They've all like ran their own businesses. My mom had battled cancer. Like I'd kind of seen, I've been quite empowered, I think, from a really young age, but unknown to me that was actually what I was, you know, taking in. So I was just kind of always raised to do the right thing.
Yeah.
So to not do the right thing to me is really alien. So when I see, you know, certain things going on, I'm like, but why is this even happening? Like, people need to know about this or whatever. And I think especially with the Black Lives Matters movement, it was, I didn't realize it was going to take such a toll.
Yeah.
Along with a lot of other things, but it was more so about, okay, people are finally listening to black trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Something that hasn't been taken seriously for so many years. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking like hundreds and hundreds of years, to the point it's like, okay, there's finally a shift in society. Like, you have to kind of strike while the iron's hot, especially when people want to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a double-edged sword, because not only are you doing it off, you know, your own back and having to kind of bring up and relive a lot of trauma you would have went through as a child. And like, the thing is the black experience is so broad, everybody's experience is completely different. It's on a spectrum. So it took its toll, but it was, again, I was just like, people need to know.
Yeah.
You know, and if I'm the person who's most accessible, well, I feel like I was at the time for Irish media. Like, my phone pretty much didn't stop for weeks. I don't know how I automatically just kind of accidentally became this spokesperson for such a huge movement that is global.
Well, I think you were in a particular position as well, because obviously your dad is American.
Exactly, yeah.
And you have a whole side of your family who were in America, living through the Black Lives Matter movement in America, which obviously is where the heart of it is. But it obviously did lead to our own conversations in Ireland about racism and the experience of being not a white person in Ireland.
It was weird, because I remember after George Floyd died, the heaviness that I had felt was like, I never felt anything like it before. I felt like I was looking at my dad or my little brother or my uncles or, you know, any of my family members in the States. And it was very raw, if I'm being totally honest. I saw from a completely different lens for the first time. And I think that's because we've become so desensitized from seeing black people being shot and killed in the streets. And I was just like, no, this just isn't right. Like, I don't like that we've become desensitized to this kind of behavior. It's just insanity. So for me, I had like this, I suppose I had a sense of urgency, but I also had a sense of, I'm just sick of this. And along with everybody, I think everybody was just tired and fed up, and we were in the middle of a pandemic, and it's just like, there's only so much of that you can take. Yeah. And for me, it was just kind of a no-brainer to talk about it. And I think, especially because I was on this sort of trajectory, I suppose, to the point I was in the media a little bit more, and I think they just saw, oh, Erica's speaking on her black experience, like, let's just get in touch with her. And people wanted to do the right thing and listen to, you know, what we had to say. And I think that's why I take the term activist, I have to take it with a pinch of salt. It's because it's never a label that I put on myself.
Yeah.
And it can be quite it's quite loaded, you mm-hmm. know. It's not one of those things that I take lightly either. So for people to put that on me straight away, I had to kind of take a step back to be like, look, I'm just another black woman speaking on a black experience.
Yeah.
And as I said, they're so different. Like my black experience being a mixed race black woman, I know is going to be very different to the next person yeah. who's dark skinned black or whatever. So it's very different. So that's why I wanted to do it in a way that other voices could be amplified. Like, I have black friends who don't want to have to speak on their black experience yeah. all the time. So
and who shouldn't have to.
And who shouldn't have to, you know. We're able to just exist.
Yeah, you should be able to, yeah.
You know, well, yeah. we should be able to. But if it makes the next person's life easier, mm-hmm. not having to speak about it, mm-hmm. and if it also changes one person's mind
yeah.
out of 10,
yeah.
that's a job nearly almost well done, I suppose.
Can I ask you, like, at the time that we were kind of at the peak of these mm-hmm. conversations, I feel like there were a lot of commitments being made.
Yes.
And a lot of people were saying that they needed to do better and acknowledging their own kind of failings. Do you feel like there has been an improvement?
Yeah, I think there definitely has been a shift. But like anything, like sexism, misogyny, racism are all issues that aren't going to be solved in a day.
Yeah.
And I think I had to keep reminding myself of that, whereas yeah. I just wanted it to be this thing. Like, me personally, I was like, I just want this to be over. Like, yeah. why can't we all just exist? Like, it's really not that hard to be sound, you know?
I know.
And then I had to check myself because I was like, Erica, like, we're trying to relearn and teach people how to treat us 400 years plus in the making. Yeah. So if it's 400 years plus in the making, it's only gonna, it might not be until my children's children's yeah. children, you know. It's one of those things you have to just be patient with. And if you're making these changes along the way, that's what it takes, you know, pulling people up on their behavior, etc., etc. The list goes on.
So at the heart of your career, obviously, yeah. you're doing lots of things now. She does a bit of modeling as well, you know, not content with all of that. But, you know, at the heart of your career, obviously, is music. And you yes. have a new single out.
I do look like this.
Yeah. And it's a lovely one.
Do you like her? I'm just so happy. I feel like I've just been having so much fun
yeah.
over the last, like, 9 months yeah. that I was like, I want my music to reflect that. I've spent yeah. the last 5 months dancing. I want to be able to dance to my music.
Yeah.
I've, you know, we just had this like amazing stint on television with yeah. the main stage. Like, I've just been surrounded by either music or dance for the yeah. last couple of months, and it's really spilled through into my new music. So great. I feel like I'm just making probably my favorite stuff. Yeah, I have so many songs and like in my pocket at the moment that I just can't wait to release. So I'm like, 2023, that's the year.
That is brilliant news, because yes. I know people can't wait to hear them. And I thank you so much for chatting to me,
thank
Erica.
Thank you for having me. You're so good.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Okay, couldn't be happier to be with Cian Sullivan and James O'Hagan, who are, of course, the hosts of Sissy That Pod and also Queer Classified. Mm-hmm. How many other podcasts are you going to pull out of here?
How many do you want?
We're in the Fringe this year as well.
Yeah, that's me a new too. Thing.
Oh, my Fringe catch-up. Fringe. We love this.
Yeah. Tell me about your Fringe show. What's the story?
Yeah, so basically, for people who watch Drag Race, it's going to be a Irish improvised drag version of Snatch Game.
Oh my god.
So we did like a mock version over COVID on YouTube, but basically it's going to be four nights. Drag queens, stand-up improvisers, cabaret performers are going to be doing their best celebrity impersonations, making us laugh.
And it's Smock Alley at 9 p.m. So, you know, come along and then head up just to Street 66. You'll have a great time.
Absolutely, yeah. And for people who don't know what Snatch Game is, it's basically kind of blankety-blank, except where the celebrity panel are going to be celebrity impersonations. So it's called Clankety-Clank, you know.
That sounds fantastic. I will do my damnedest to be there. I keep forgetting to mention this, so it's good that this is coming up in case I forget again, that I'm doing the live version of this podcast.
Oh, super.
As part of the Fringe. Yeah.
Oh my god, that would be exciting. Will that be like your first live kind of, that'll be very exciting.
Yeah.
The nerves coming up to doing something like that are always like kind of like tipping away, but then the second it starts, it's like, this is amazing. I love it.
I love doing that stuff. I just it's because it's the first time, it's kind of like, you know, how's it gonna go? But anyway, sure. Look.
And are tickets on sale now?
Tickets are on sale now. Are your tickets on sale now?
Tickets are on sale now.
Super. Okay, well, let's get into it. We've got lots of celeb stuff to talk about this week. And the minute I asked you guys if you would join me this week, you said, are we going to be talking about Kevin Federline and Britney?
Yeah.
And of course, we have to, because K-Fed speaks.
Yeah, so obviously he decided the time was right to crawl out from under whatever bridge he lives in that Britney's paying for, to have his say about basically the way she's choosing to live her life. So as part of an interview that he's doing with, I don't know whether it's the Daily Mail or ITV, it seems to be some sort of collaboration of both of them. He wanted to speak about what it's like to be a father in the spotlight, but has used the opportunity to throw an enormous amount of shade at Britney for the way she's choosing to present herself on Instagram, claiming that her children do not want to be seen with her, that they didn't want to attend her wedding, and also to make overtures to the fact that he believes that actually poor old Jamie Spears, the evil man that's had her held in the castle without any way to get out for the last 14 years, has been put through the ringer and really deserves better. So all in all, I don't know what he was thinking.
Yeah, it's such a weird kind of position to take and so unpleasant. Like, I just think there's never any excuse, in my opinion, to be talking about your children, like for your children, when you're talking about a custody kind of dispute.
Mm-hmm. I think that, like, so we'll obviously be touching on another situation where you have parents at war later on in the entertainment section. And I think it's interesting to look at the way the media has responded to this story with Britney versus that story with Kanye. Where Kanye kind of gets a free pass. Oh, he's just a bit, you know, he's just a bit of a goofball. This is just him. Whereas with her, there's such an amount of slut shaming and a media that has kind of, you know, done its best to pretend it's become a bit more woke, a bit more open to women owning their own bodies and their own sexuality, has just been so eager to jump back into full-on shame mode behind the sort of guise of saying, oh yeah, the children will be uncomfortable to see that. And it's like, you know, we're living in a world now where sex work is a perfectly valid form of work. People with families are making a living, a very generous living and a good living off of things like OnlyFans. So like we should have moved past the point where kind of a woman choosing to share her body on the internet is sort of something that can call into question whether or not she's a good mother.
Now, I will say, I wish she would get a better photographer or like just some styling or something going on. I have no issue whatsoever with her showing her body. That's absolutely fine with me. However, I do feel like she could do better.
I would agree.
Stylistically.
Her kids are, so Sean Preston's 16, Jaden James is 15. Any teenager is going to be embarrassed by their mum being naked. That's just the nature of teenagers. When you grow up and you start to see your parents in a light that isn't parenthood, it's always jarring. They find it strange. But just because these teenagers find it embarrassing doesn't mean it's wrong. Like, you know, and if they do, also they've been given to Kevin Federline since the start of the conservatorship. So he's had however many years to poison them against Britney.
And nothing else to do by any stage. Exactly. He doesn't even have a job.
He got,
according to Sam.
I imagine he got 20 grand a month to look after them. So of course he's kicking up fuss now that he wants them back under the conservatorship, because as Sam Asghari said, his gravy train is running out.
Yeah.
I absolutely live for Sam Asghari. defending Britney in a way that he does.
Do you think it was appropriate? Like, I kind of just feel like, support her in real life, you don't need to take to Instagram.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It did feel a bit performative, but like, I don't know, I just like it.
I think it's good to see her have someone that will like come out swinging for her and will like really like have her, you know, what seems to be her best interest at heart. I mean, you know, there's questions to be asked about like where Sam came from, how he managed to get through the net of the conservatorship to start forming his relationship. So there's a whole weird question there about like him anyway, but at this moment, he seems really like he has her best interest at heart. They seem like they're really in love. I do think that kind of bringing the children into it in any capacity is, and even the parenting techniques in any capacity is sort of a negative thing to do for children who are clearly going to be a bit sort of weirded out by all of this attention. Because like, you know, we make light of the fact that he hasn't had a job, but like rearing a family and raising children is a job. He's been getting 20 to 60 grand a year to do it, so he's probably got plenty of help.
20 grand a month.
Or 20 grand, but didn't he go back to the court a while ago?
He wanted 60 grand extra a month.
Oh my God. But anyway, like, you know, there is work in
how
raising
how are
family,
the rest so. Of us surviving? I mean,
a quarter million a year to look after your kids.
Honestly.
Anyone would take it.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on, because as you mentioned, there is, of course, another couple who continue to be in the news for tension. And it has to be said, it's one-sided. There's one person in this relationship who is causing problems. And of course, I'm talking about Kim and Kanye, because there was loads of stuff around them this week, which started with the fact that Kim and Pete broke up.
Yes. So Kanye West,
and we both looked at Kim. The non-Kardashian watcher.
Yeah, I had to call my friend Sammy for a cheat sheet on this. But no, I follow the Kanye stuff more just because I was a fan of his music. But yeah, he recently posted on Instagram very polished tile by some good graphic designer who put this together of a picture of the folded up New York Times with the title Skeet Davidson is dead. There's a little dig at Kid Cudi at the bottom of the page as well about a poor performance he had recently. And it's just a continuation of Kanye's constant sort of trolling of Pete and Kim and their relationship ever since he released that video several months ago where he decapitated Pete, this sort of like a waxwork version of Pete. Okay, there is that narrative around Kanye that he's suffering from bipolar and other mental health issues, but to a certain degree, you know, he still has to take responsibility for what he's doing. He obviously has nobody around him who's encouraging him to make good choices. And although you can have sympathy for a man who's clearly spinning out mentally, that doesn't excuse the bullying that he's doing.
Yeah.
No, you can have mental health problems and not be an arsehole.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think, like, you know, you don't have to look much further than this year's Love Island to see places where sadly sometimes mental health gets used as a kind of a coverall for any form of behaviour. And
Jax was also a bully as well, so it's a nice analogy.
but I think, like, the choice to do this just, it really feels like as if, again, he doesn't have anyone like advising him on like what is appropriate or kind of like trying to like teach him what he should be doing in the situation. He should have left it alone. Like, this was obviously a publicity relationship between, it may or may not have been a publicity relationship.
As the biggest
between,
Kardashian fan, do you believe Kim and Pete were real?
I actually do.
Okay.
I actually do.
I thought it was like, this is, you know, I was like real in that Kim was like, I've had a very intense last while. I'm going to get myself a manic pixie dream boy.
Yes.
And I'm going to just like enjoy a couple of months. That the timing of this relationship ending could have come sort of at any convenient space for the Kardashians. Yeah. That there was a number of things they needed to cover up this weekend. And I think they pulled out the big guns in order to. So my conspiracy theory and all of the timing of the end of this Pete and Kim thing and the announcement of the Tristan Chloe surrogacy is that both of them were strategically placed on the Friday afternoon so as nobody would be talking about Travis Scott's return and
the Astroworld
thing, and that story wouldn't come bubbling back up again. Because in reality, over an immaculate run of Kardashian sort of media empire ownership over like decades at this point, that Astroworld thing is the one where there is the real kind of like
darkness.
And so I think both of these stories were placed there because they didn't want people talking about Travis Scott making a comeback.
Well, look, I mean, as we all know, the devil works hard, but Kris Jenner works harder. So I'm sure that all of this was carefully orchestrated. But I actually missed what's going on with Travis. He's back.
He did his first live performance since Astroworld.
Okay. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And that's why Kylie had Stormy there.
Exactly.
Yeah, the whole thing. Okay, I didn't realize that was his first gig back. Yeah, well, that makes sense to me. That makes perfect sense to me. And of course, as you mentioned there, Chloe and Tristan had their their son via surrogacy. We've no real information other than that.
No.
We have to wait till September 2022 to...
Exactly.
I'm just very dubious about the whole relationship. Like, I just feel if I had a friend, a 40-year-old mother of four who has a full-time independent business and is putting herself through law career, whose long-term marriage has just fallen down, turns to me and goes, I'm with a 28-year-old tattooed comedian, I'd be like, this is a cry for help.
I'd be like, get your life, girl. I'd be like, absolutely, get out there, have fun.
He's on the up and up as well, and he's benefiting to a huge extent. Oh, by all accounts, like, Kris Jenner has taken him under her wing as well and is helping him get like sponsorship deals with the likes of H&M and has like given him a certain amount of credibility to start as he makes like that launch pad away from SNL. Yeah. So like I absolutely believe that when in this statement that was released about the relationship, it said that like, we've got so much love and respect for each other, we really wish each other well, we're just going to be friends. I think it actually was just a thing of like, well, this relationship has ran its course, it was fun, but we're not going to damage the friendship that we, or damage the business partnership that we may have.
And I absolutely think that too. I mean, I think I didn't ever think that they were going to get married.
I don't even believe that they've had sex.
Do you not?
No.
Oh, I do.
This is a purely business transaction.
No. Oh, no. No, because I think Kim was like, I'm going to have some fun. And as she said in the show, so you haven't watched the show. But in the show, she was like, I did SNL. Like, he was really funny. We kissed in a sketch. And I was like, oh, actually, there's something there. She was like, she literally said, I've heard about this big BDE, this big dick energy. She's like, maybe I should just see. And she kind of basically said, like, it's really fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think it was real.
You're more informed than me, I suppose.
I think she really needed that, because I mean, I find Kanye is such an overbearing energy.
Yeah.
And when he was with Kim, he stripped away so much of the humor, so much of the kind of just like goofiness, so much of the kind of sense of fun that she does really have. Like, she's always had since the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Part of like, I think why people attach themselves so much to the Kardashians was their ability to kind of laugh at the ridiculousness of themselves right from the very beginning. And Kanye can't do that because he needs to be so serious. Yeah. And I think that like this was her, like, he is, in a way, Pete Davidson is like the perfect opposite to Kanye. He completely takes himself absolutely like in no way seriously and is just there to have fun.
Yeah.
Well, gossip columnist Dumois has said that apparently season two was very light on content. So they had to ship Kim and Pete off to Australia for another round just to get content and stuff. So I feel he was primarily there because I might even watch to see what he's like, because we don't have a fly in the wall view of what his life is like, and what better for him on the Kardashians.
Yeah, like, I'll be honest, when I heard that they'd broken up, my first thought was, oh no, don't edit him out of season two. Yeah. Like, I really want to see that. I want to see them together. Like, there's this tiny clip that they've released of like Chloe and Pete are talking, and Kim comes out of like, they're in it like a hotel suite, and she comes out of the bedroom like unzipping her dress, and she's like, babe, do you want to come have a shower real quick? And he like comedically like throws his phone across the room and like runs in, and I'm like, I want to see that, like, give me more of that. So hopefully they'll leave it in. Okay, now in really sad news, Olivia Newton-John passed away this week.
Yeah, so Dame Olivia Newton-John, queen herself, passed away. Unfortunately, she was suffering from her third cancer diagnosis, this time cancer at the base of the spine, and she passed away in her US ranch, surrounded by her family, and her husband confirmed the news there this week. So yeah, it's really, really sad.
It's been really interesting, like, what's been apparent, I think, is how universally loved she was.
That's what I was just going to say, is that there literally has not been a single snide comment or, you know, kind of like raised eyebrow about like passing away. Like, she just seems to have been this ray of light in the industry, and just so like universally loved by everyone, from Grease fans to people who remember her music, to people who really only ever maybe even knew her as kind of like that, the caring older woman that she presented speaking about her own lived experience. A beautiful person, and it's, you know, tragic. 73, you know, it's amazing to think that probably like 10 years ago I would have been like, that's a grand I'm like, that is so young. She had years ahead of her,
and she's kind of like, she's interesting career wise because she, well, born in England, grew up in Australia, but it's kind of like the inverse of Kylie, where she was a lot bigger in the US than she was in the UK. It's like she broke through in 1971 in the UK. She had her first like US number one with If Not For You, but then she went on to represent UK in the Eurovision in 1974. She came fourth to a small little four piece called ABBA in the same year in Brighton. And then that kind of like brought her this side of the pond as well. So she had like a slew of fits leading her up to Greece. And then like after Greece, she kind of like embraced her more sexy side with physical and everything. Yeah, but at that point, she was in like her mid-30s. So it was like kind of almost like what Beyonce is doing now, which is like really embracing her sexuality in her 30s, which isn't allowed for a lot of female musicians. No. So great to see.
You go, Olivia, or IP. Mm-hmm. Now we have to mention Niall Horan and Lewis Capaldi's charm offensive on both Dublin and Mullingar over the past week.
I mean, my God. You know, like Mullingar got that, like they obviously got the call to be like, you've got the flat. And the first phone call they made was like, we need Niall Horan here. We need Niall Horan now. And he said, come on, Lewis, get in. We're going busking. Yeah, I mean, cute little videos coming from all over Dublin, or was it over in Grafton Street where they were busking last week before they headed down to Mullingar for the FLA. Just like I saw people tweeting online that they didn't recognize Lewis Capaldi, so they just thought that this was just some randomer who was like, you know, stepping in beside Niall Horan. I mean, we love an Irish guy done well, and I feel like Niall Horan is really representing us well.
He looks so rich.
Oh, doesn't he?
Doesn't he?
He just drips of money. Yeah,
he has a clever way of presenting, which is, I'm wealthy, but I don't have notions.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's a really niche spot to pull off.
Yeah, he just looks great. And then Lewis Capaldi is the total contrast, which I also love. Mm. Like Lewis Capaldi, you know, I suppose Ed Sheeran invented it, the like, I'm not making any effort kind of look. But with I don't know, it offends me less with Lewis Capaldi for some reason.
it's much less manicured than it is with Ed Sheeran. Like, you know, Lewis Capaldi just, like, he genuinely looks like, this is, I just got up out of bed and I'm coming out to do this and I'm here because I really want to be. He has a lovely warmth about him as well. Yeah. And the two of them together interacted really nicely in that it felt like as if they're obviously great friends. Yeah. They love performing for a crowd. Yeah. They wanted to be part of it. It was...
Well, I thought, like, because Lewis sang Niall's song, Slow Hands, when they were with that bus on Grafton Street, and he knew, like, up till a point, he knew all of the, like, he knew the verses, he knew the, you know, I would have been like, slow hands. But he knew it, so there he's a fan, obviously.
I hadn't thought of Lewis Capaldi in ages. He hasn't had new music out in a while.
No, he was supposed to. He did a gig recently. You know, he's hilarious. Yeah. And he did a gig recently where he came out and he said, I was supposed to have a whole new album to sing for you at this gig when it was booked, but I'm really lazy and the album's not ready. So, I mean, that seems to
I would embrace him going the way of Michelle McManus and just going into stand-up, because I feel like that's how I invest him more as a pop star, as just this, like, really funny, enjoyable personality.
Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely.
I mean, he does have a great singing voice.
He does.
Music
he
isn't handsome. Really for me.
Some beautiful,
like,
some beautiful songs.
Yeah,
you know?
And people absolutely love his music. Yeah. Fair play to them.
Some beautiful songs.
Oh god. The good news is that they had a camera crew with them, and I think it was for TG Carr. It's the program that TG Carr are making, which is brilliant for
That'd
them and for us 100%. And for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly.
Okay, before we go, Cian, you wanted to talk about the Victoria's Secret documentary series which you watched this week, and I will be honest, I didn't manage to get through all three episodes, but I watched a good bit of it. James, did you?
Yeah, I watched the three episodes of it. I was having Cian a quick chat about this yesterday. I have feelings. I think it's
recommended it, I was two episodes in. The third episode did disappoint, but basically I guess I'm really invested in the Jeffrey Epstein story. Uh-huh. I think it's a remarkable story in shedding the light of how toxic the billionaires of the world are. And I'd like it between him and Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yeah.
So Angels and Demons, it's like a Victoria's Secret story. Basically, the owner of Victoria's Secret, Les Wexner, is best buddies with Jeffrey Epstein, seems to be going back even to like the late 80s, early 90s.
Such a weird relationship as well.
Yeah,
he like gave
is.
Him power of attorney really well, early in their relationship, gave Jeffrey Epstein power of attorney.
Yeah, well, there's a really, for people who like the Jeffrey Epstein story who haven't heard of it, there's a great podcast.
It feels weird to say like the Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah.
Like, people who are interested.
It's a horrifying story. Yeah. No, 100%. But like, if you're interested in, there's a really good podcast called Ghislaine and Me. It's at Audible exclusive. Mm. And it's this British journalist who used to know Ghislaine Maxwell and had to write an article for Vanity Fair on how Jeffrey Epstein got his money, and interviewed him, and has big transcripts of the interviews that she has with him. And she goes really deep on how he kind of got to where he was financially, which is really interesting. And Les Wexner is a huge part of the story in terms of how he... It's kind of, did he swindle his way into becoming a power of attorney? Were they actually good friends? So it touches on that, but it also touches on the growth of Victoria's Secret in terms of a brand, how it became everywhere, how they used the angels as this great marketing technique, and then over the years how they became out of touch, they didn't adapt at the time, similar to the Abercrombie and Fitch documentary that we were talking about as well, the white hot one, and how then they just really became kind of old-fashioned really, really quickly by not adapting to body diversity and racial diversity. Also.
It was really interesting to me because it seemed to me like, I remember in one of the early meetings, they were, one of the people who was speaking, who had worked in Victoria's Secret, was saying that, like, you know, everyone in those big meetings where decisions were being made were men.
Yeah.
And I think there has been a real turning point in terms of women and women's identity and women's existence and women's expectations about their place in the world.
Yes.
That Les Wexler...
Wexner,
wasn't able to click into. So it was fine as long as women were all about the male gaze and about being super hot and sexy. Mm. Like, he and his men obviously were experts on how to be super hot and sexy for men. But then as soon as women started to kind of embrace their own identity and focus more on, you know, who they wanted to be for themselves or even for other women, you know, I think that's when things got a bit tricky for them.
Yeah, I mean, that I think that's exactly it. Is that the whole... So Les Wexner basically invented mall shopping. He created this idea of kind of fast fashion.
I didn't realize how many brands he had. Like, as a teenager who grew up in America, let me tell you, the Limited, Express, like, Lane Bryant, like, all of these stores are huge. Like, they were in every mall in America.
Yeah. And he was turning them over so fast. And to be able to, he created this sort of want and need to be presenting this sort of, like, image of yourself. And with Victoria's Secret, he devised and developed, and a boardroom full of men devised and developed this idea of what a perfect woman is and what a perfect woman should want. And for, I think, a long period of time, women bought into that. And I think the interesting part of this documentary for me, like, I didn't love this documentary as much because I think it focused too much on the Epstein stuff. I was like, give us a separate Epstein Wexner documentary, but let's just talk about the angels here. It was that once women started being like, well, actually, no, why should I have to have these expectations? Why should it be that I should have this group of men telling me how my body is or what my body should look like? It was... that sort of really just quickly made, like, they talk about Savage Fenty and Rihanna and this creation of, you know, just loving your own body for what it is and celebrating yourself, and how they just weren't able to react to that. So I would have liked to have seen more about the angels and how it is that pleasing the male gaze was what people wanted for such a long time, and the change away from that.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's really funny as well that, like, you know, we know that Victoria's Secret is stalling in a major way, and still they're not making changes. You know, I just watched Michaela Noguera, who's this, like, absolutely enormous TikTok beauty person. And she's been speaking really honestly. She started actually a whole different TikTok just to talk about this stuff, about the fact that she has an eating disorder and she has put on a lot of weight and she's trying to be at peace with that. And she did a TikTok where she said, well, today I found out I'm no longer welcome in Victoria's Secret. She said, I went in to be resized because my body has changed and none of my bras fit me anymore and they have nothing for me. And there were just countless women in the replies. And, like, I have never bought a bra in Victoria's Secret because my boobs have never, even when I was a teenager, have never been able to fit into anything that they sell. And the fact that that's, I assumed things had improved, and I think they have marginally, but like, the fact that you've still got someone like, you know, Michaela with her enormous platform saying,
documentary implies they've only really improved marketing places. They've just colored up their marketing campaign. That's pretty much it. They use the earth tones. But I guess to tie back to Epstein briefly, as far back as 1993, he was trying to get young girls under the guise that he was a Victoria Agency scout. So it just goes to show how long this horrible, horrible behavior has been going on and was let happen.
I watched another documentary series recently that was, it's on Sky, Scouting for Girls, it's called, and it's about the modeling industry and similar kind of carry on in the modeling industry. And I was watching it, and I was watching the Victoria's Secret documentary, and I was wondering, I hope that things are different now, that if someone was put into a position, a young woman, that they would know that people will believe them, that it's not appropriate, that it's not okay. I hope, but then when you put power into the mix, it just messes everything up.
And I do think as well, it's like there's so much of this has been publicized and so many documentaries have been made sort of talking about how unacceptable this is. And it's like, well, I do feel like a lot of times they're just going to be speaking to people like us, and that there's a whole, like if you're coming from a background of poverty, or if you're coming from like a particularly hard life, and you get offered an opportunity that could potentially transform that.
Yeah.
Are you going to feel as if you can bite the hand that feeds you?
Yeah.
When you should totally be entitled to be like, well, at what cost?
You're right. And also, so much of it comes down to what's been modeled for you in terms of relationships and relationship dynamics.
Yeah.
And if you've grown up in a family or a community where the dynamics are toxic, then if you are in a toxic situation, that's going to seem familiar and normal to you. Yeah.
Yeah. The documentary's on Paramount Plus anyway, for anyone who wants to hear it. I think James's critique is fair. It is kind of like half Victoria's Secret's, half Epstein. Yeah. But if you're interested by this conversation,
I want my full on worth watching. I want my full on Victoria's Secret
Giselle Bundchen fantasy,
you know. And I mean, are we going to move to the cancellation of Victoria's Secret the drag queen now? Come on, change that name, girl. Change that name, girl.
Thank you so much, Cian O'Sullivan. Cian Sullivan.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. When I said it there, I was like, that's not his name. Thank you so much, Cian Sullivan, James O'Hagan. People can check you out, obviously. CC That Pod, Queer Classified, and go and see them in the Fringe.
Yeah, clankety clank. See you there.
Come along.
Just about time for me to go, but before I do, I do have a couple of recommendations for you. I didn't have a lot of time for consuming culture this week. However, I did. I was getting tattooed the other day and I wanted something I could kind of half watch and that I didn't have to pay much attention to. And so I went back and started watching Southern Charm again from the very beginning. If you're a Housewives fan, if you have Hey You, it's on there. It is an absolutely bonkers show, and honestly, when you watch from season one again, it's problematic in so many ways, but it is wildly entertaining. It's set in Charleston, South Carolina. The first season is primarily just like wealthy white people. And it's very interesting actually to see the kind of lingering, as I said, problematic elements to life in places like Charleston, South Carolina, in terms of where they've come from, plantations to I don't even know, you know, the moneyed classes. It's interesting from that perspective, but it's also total trash and wonderful. So easy to watch. Watch these people make terrible mistakes, treat each other really badly. It's all the stuff we know and love from reality television. So that's Southern Charm. It's on Hey You. Other than that, I can't remember if I recommended the Muna album. I'm obsessed with Muna. They make the best music. They're signed to Phoebe Bridgers' label. If I have mentioned them before, please forgive me. I just love them so much. And this week I watched a live stream of one of their gigs in Minneapolis, and it was so good, and it got me straight back into the album again, even though it only came out a few weeks ago. But I had taken a quick break for Beyonce and for Maggie Rogers, I really am enjoying both of their albums. But yeah, Muna, their album is called Muna, M-U-N-A, can't recommend it enough. Beautiful songs, great pop songs, just brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. So there you go. I will be back with you next Friday. I hope you have a lovely week in the meantime. And at the very least, I hope you manage to put one foot in front of the other and take care of yourself. I'll talk to you then.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all,
jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.